Welcome to a brand new best podcast in baseball. The Cardinals have made their most significant trade of the offseason so far. It's the first big headline of the Heim Bloom era, and it does signal how we might be shifting the question we ask about the Cardinals. Fans have long had an urgency about what do they do today that gets them closer to winning the World Series tomorrow. That question might be shifting a little bit as I talk with Post-Dispatch editor Nathan Mills to what do they do today that gets them closer to winning their next World Series, whenever that is. They're not putting a date on it. Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by editor Nathan Mills. We are, well, Nathan, happy Thanksgiving, first of all.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Almost 2 years to the date on which the Cardinals signed the Sonny Gray as part of their pitching offseason. They have traded Sonny Gray to the Boston Red Sox to begin an offseason that I guess we can call young pitching. What was it that struck you about the deal as we dive into the details of it and a discussion of what it means for the Cardinals' direction, which we kind of already knew, but now we have tangible evidence of?
Yeah. I was surprised, first of all, that it was so quick. And then, of course, learned afterward why. But that was the first thing. And then, you know, to be honest with you, Derek, I kind of thought the Cardinals would get like a 40 future value prospect and maybe a lottery ticket or two for Gray, given that how much money he was owed. But restructuring his deal and sending some money up the return quite a bit. You know, they got a useful for 2026, a guy who screams Cardinals pitcher, right, in Richard Fitz. And then they got a potential blue chipper in Brandon Clark. So, I think they did pretty well.
Tell folks what you mean by that 40. I think that's like a really fascinating scale to use. And then I will admit. Yeah.
Yeah, well, so listen. A lot of that is like, it's all projection, right? Like,
right.
Especially when there's no telling, you know, who anybody is or what anybody is. But you know about the 20-80 scale, right? 80 being elite, you know, top of the line prospect. And future value is just kind of a projected, you know, median range, right, for where these guys are going to end up. I figured a 40, you know, 40, maybe 45 value prospect.
Yeah.
And then a lottery ticket or two. And instead, you know, that's a middle of the road guy, somebody who's maybe useful, but not a star. Instead, right. They got a guy who's currently at a 50 future value in Brandon Clark, has risen since he came into the minors. And now that he's healthier, right, and getting to show some flashes of what his arm potential can do, there's a good chance that rises even further. And then they got Richard Fitz, who's a guy who can fit, slot into your rotation in 2026. Listen, this isn't an ace. This is a back of the rotation guy, but this is a guy who can eat innings for you and do it reliably and potentially do it well. You know, so I think they did really, really well in this trade, all things considered.
Both of the pitchers are going to be, you know, watched closely, but also going to get to be part of the new development system that the Cardinals have in place. And we saw it in action over the past year. Whether it was what they were able to do with Matt Swanson stands out, what they hope to do with Kyle Leahy after having done it, but also what, say, Bryson Matz, the pitcher of the year for the Cardinals in their organization, and one of the lefties, or lefty, and one of the pitchers added to the 40-player roster this past few weeks. You know, a guy like that who really took great strides and then had great performance in AA as a result of it. These are two guys who go into that system. And, you know, whether it's Fitz at the major league level or Clark at the minor league level, they're both going to have some suggestions coming from the brain trust of pitching that the Cardinals have put together for either their pitch mix, their pitch shape. I think in that regard, Fitz comes with a little bit more upside than his numbers would suggest.
I agree completely. That's
mostly because he has six pitches. He has a sweeper. You know, he comes from the Red Sox, but he was drafted by the Yankees. And so he got to go into the Yankees, you know, famed sweeper school. He comes with that. He could get that sharper. I think there's a real element of like, what does he do with his fastball mix? And can he create some swing and miss with his off-speed stuff that isn't there right now. There's a real sense that like he's got the profile of pitchers who do thrive with the Cardinals right from the start, because if he puts the ball in play, they got a good defense behind him. And then what else can he do with his mix of pitches to get more swings and misses?
Yeah, the ballpark's bigger too, right? I mean, Busch is a ballpark that holds baseballs, you know? And yeah. He's a guy who in the past has been, and granted, doesn't have a lot of time in the majors, but he's been bitten by the home run ball a couple of times. And, you know, I think that might come down a little bit. I think it's reasonable to expect that to come down just by virtue of being in Busch, you know, for half of his games roughly, you know. I think the big thing too with both him and Clark is that they fit into the window, right? Not only do they come into this new Cardinals system, but they fit into the new Cardinals window. This isn't a team playing for 2026. This is a team playing for probably 2028, realistically, at best, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe later, and these guys both fit that window now.
I expected the Cardinals to get a pretty good return on Sonny Gray. Coming out of the general manager's meeting, you know, it was clear that there was interest in Sonny Gray. Different from a year ago, there was also interest from Sonny Gray in waiving his no trade clause and being willing to rework his deal. He did that. He got a little bit more grease, so salary wise, $1 million, an additional guarantee. He's going to be one of the highest paid players in total salary guaranteed next year as a result of all this. The Cardinals, the part that caught my eye and that I was wrong on was how much the Cardinals would have to send in, and I'll admit that
I never expected they would have sent that much money in at all. That's why I thought the return would be so low.
See, I thought the return would be high because of the competitive kind of mix of teams involved, and the fact that you had the added pressure of unknown after 2026 due to the CBA. Yeah. There is a real appeal, and I heard this from other teams. I heard this from, you know, evaluators, you know, not with teams. All this stuff just in talking with folks leading up to and then at the GM meetings, there's this real sense that like there's no such thing as a bad 1 year contract. Two, some of these teams are like, man, we really need to win in this window before our guys start to age into a potential lockout in 2027. You know, like a Philly, right? What do the Phillies do? Or, you know, these teams that are like, okay, we could really benefit from a really good pitcher on a short term deal. And that doesn't exist in the free agent market. And it really doesn't exist via trade, except for here he is, Sonny Gray. And there are some teams he'll be a number two on. There are some teams that he'll be the game two starter for a playoff. There's a world where he goes off and has a really remarkable season, and all the peripherals that he had this past year under the hood, as they say, manifest, and he has a great season. I mean, this is a guy who has 200 strikeouts each of the past 2 years, has improved on his strikeout rate each of the past 2 years, has reduced his walk rate. His fastball gets hammered, which suggests that maybe he needs to just flip the script a little bit, become less predictable, all these things that he talked about, that the Cardinals talked about with him, but he can do, and even at his age is projectable for him to do at 36. You know, he could be a really lights out pitcher. And all that is to say that he had a real appeal. Lights out for five innings, right? Like, that's the other part of the Sonny Gray equation, right? That, you know, it may not be the seven innings that you want from the rotation leader, the six innings from a rotation leader. But this had real appeal in the marketplace, because there is no way you're getting a pitcher like that on a one-year deal. You're just not. And I thought the Cardinals could really use that and the interest in him to get a good return. What they did do is they showed by giving $20 million. So they're paying just about half of the guarantee for him. But by including $20 million, they improved the return that they got. And I think they also signaled, Nathan, that they're willing to pay for talent if it's controllable talent. You know, and I think that's really something to take note of here. They are effectively saying, we'll put $20 million into getting five more years of performance from Richard Fitz at a cross-controlled status, and, you know, 6 years of Brandon Clark when he gets to the majors of a cross-controlled status. I think that's a really fascinating element of this that shows what dollar figure they're putting on investing in the future.
Yes, yeah, it's funny that you mentioned dollars because my first thought when this trade happened was, yeah, that's a pretty good return. That's better than what I thought they would get. My second thought was, wow, they sent 20 million. I wonder how much they'd be willing to send to move Arenado.
Yeah. I mean, it starts at 15 million. I mean, that's everything I've heard is it starts at 15 million and we can bet it goes up from there.
I'm sure.
The performance is different, right? Like the team that is trading for Sonny Gray is seeing him as, somebody who will start a playoff game for them. The team that is now looking at Nolan Arenado is looking at his recent performance and is saying, okay, we got an elite glove at third base. And everything else offensively, they want the Cardinals to shoulder the risk for. So that's what it'll be. Like if they get upside offensively, then it's a win for them. But financially, they want to say in the marketplace, this is what an elite defensive player would get. And we want the Cardinals to, and this is where things stand right now. This is where they had to navigate through last year, is we want the Cardinals to take on the risk of what is there offensively. You know what? The Cardinals, I mean, part of it becomes how much do they want to move him? How much do they want to do Nolan Arenado a solid? How much does Arenado want to do the Cardinals a solid by accepting a deal? And then, the dollar figures are sorted out from there. This is where they are right now. But Nathan, the market might not move at the tempo that they want, just because you have, I mean, you have the staring contest in play, right? You have the Scott Boras staring contest because he represents Alex Bregman. And, Alex Bregman is a third baseman. He's the most popular available third baseman, best third baseman probably available. Some of the teams that will want him as a free agent would then be the teams that pivot to Arenado if they don't get him. There's, Japanese player from, there's two corner infielders coming from Japan that could be third baseman, kind of, but they're at least in the conversation. So it's not as direct a market as we saw with Sonny Gray.
It feels like a kind of a repeat of last year with waiting on Bregman and then, potentially settling Arenado's market after that.
Yeah, except for they went, there is a model last year where they went to the team that had Bregman that realized they weren't going to sign Bregman and made a deal with them. At least this time, if they were to go to Boston and say, well, you had Bregman, how do you feel about re-signing him? If they don't feel real strong about it, then they know that's a place that Nolan Arenado would consider.
How would you like another $20 million? The Cardinals say.
Right, yeah, that's right. Yeah, how can we reduce your CBT payroll by that much, less?
Help us
How can we
help
chip
you.
in?
That's right.
That's not, that's a little funny part about it is the Red Sox. When a player goes to a new team, the calculation is the total value of that year's contract. They like don't get the benefit of the AAV. Really inside baseball thing, and we can get to a few inside baseball thing, but I find that part interesting. So the Red
I
Sox.
love all the inside baseball things.
Yeah.
Man. I guess in a way it kind of makes sense, but yeah, I would hate that. That would, if I were on the opposite end of that, I would be frustrated by that as a GM or
Yeah.
president of baseball operations. Derek, we talked a little bit about the window changing. Cardinals looking, you in the intro here talked about the futures market. So let's talk future. What's next?
Well, Arenado is sort of the ubiquitous conversation of the offseason. It's just there. The trading of him is just the through line for the Cardinals. What's next is considering what to maximize as far as Brendan Donovan. A lot of interest in him. You have the usual teams trying to push for him. That is allowing some time for the Cardinals to sort through that because they want to maximize the return on that. You also have teams. Basically, if you're a left-handed hitter or a left-handed pitcher nearing free agency, Jojo Romero, the Cardinals are getting interest on you. If you're a catcher or a former all-star catcher, Wilson Contreras, the Cardinals have received interest from other teams on you. So the Cardinals are sorting through all that. I don't think they have like a plan of action list. Except for the amount of teams interested in Brendan Donovan suggests that they should be able to command a high price for him. They want that to include starting pitching at the moment. That is where they're at right now is what is the start? I mean, if they could get a starter for the rotation now and years to come, for Brendan Donovan, that would very much intrigue them. That's part of what's been the conversation with Kansas City. That goes back months. You know, so we'll see if that's where things head. You know, that's part of what, you know, you look at the Yankees being involved, the Dodgers being involved. A lot of it is like, okay, what could they get pitching wise in return for him? You know, they don't want to move Lars Nootbaar at a spot where he's rehabbing from injury and they haven't seen his, you know, his potential manifest. They'd rather sell him, you know, or trade him at a high point if possible, or keep him. You know, I was talking with someone with the Cardinals about Lars and about his recovery. And while they're not closed off to trading him, you know, they said there's a real sense that like they haven't seen him at his best and they sure would like to do that, see that in his uniform. You know, it becomes a question of, I don't know. And I'll be honest, like, I don't know at the moment the Cardinals' appetite for packaging young talent to then move Arenado. In the past, they've kind of wanted to silo that off to not, and actually, like, when I say in the past, I don't mean like in the before times with a different front office.
Right.
I mean, like, in, you know, at least at the GM meetings, not, and this is, I didn't get a real sense of this from the Cardinals, but in talking with people who talked with the Cardinals, they don't want to like say, let's maximize Brendan Donovan's return, but reduce it by attaching him to Nolan Arenado's salary, right? That's like not what they want to do. Now, Nootbaar and Arenado, that's a different equation. Jojo Romero, probably not going to happen. So, you know, do you silo these things off? And they have wanted to do that for the most part, just for clarity, right? Like it starts really getting complicated. If you have an agreement in a trade, then you need Arenado's approval and you have this other player involved and you're reducing what you could get in return for that player. It just, it doesn't really fit at the moment. It doesn't seem to fit what their goal is as far as accumulating talent for the future. That would be like a move that would be like, we need to reduce payroll in the present and we have to take from our talent to do so. And if anything, that beacon of $20 million going to the Boston Red Sox suggests, man, they're in a different spot revenue wise. They're in a different spot spending wise, but they're willing to pay for talent in a way that, you know, doesn't suggest that they're just straight out trying to shed costs like say they were a year ago at this time.
Yeah, I'm gonna sell out some members of our Post-Dispatch leadership team. But when we were in our 2 o'clock planning meeting,
wait, are you spilling tea? Is this
no? It's not. It's not bad. It's a little tea, but it's not. It's not dangerous. But I bet I hear about it. There was some talk that the Sonny Gray trade might be the biggest trade the Cardinals make in the offseason. And then there was no. It's going to be the Arenado trade if that comes to fruition. And I said, I was the only one. I want you to know, Derek, I was the only one. I said, no, it's going to be the Brendan Donovan trade. Then I got kind of talked over and it, you know, it hurt me a little bit, but I'm sharing it with you now and I feel a little better. So.
All right. Well, good. Well, let's dive in. All right. Give me your, since you heard from the newsroom, and it's, I want to note that I was not in the meeting, so I didn't get.
It was a very scientific poll, but yeah, the whole newsroom was not over great.
No, not the news. Since you were in the news meeting, let's do this. What do you think? Let's not take it from the perspective of like the most likely to be traded. I want to get your perspective on who do you think it would be wise for the Cardinals to trade. Cardinals have, let's focus on the left-handed variety, right? We'll remove the Wilson Contreras and the catchers from it. Wilson, you know, we can talk about Wilson in a little bit and sort of his situation. But let's focus on the left-handers, right? Okay. So left-handed batters, Donovan, Gorman, Nootbaar, right? Burleson, and then the left-handed pitcher, Jojo Romero. There's the five. That's the five lefties. And for you podcast listeners without video, I just held up my left hand with five fingers. So the five lefties.
I like that you counted them out too, like one finger, then two fingers. Like that was
for my benefit because I'm a visual learner.
It helped me know that it was five, so I'm in good shape.
So what would be wise for? what would be the wisest move for the Cardinals? Like, rank them in order. Like, what makes the most sense for them to trade? What makes the least?
Let me start at the least, because I think the least sense to trade right now is Lars Nootbaar. You talked a little bit about why. They've not seen him at his best. He's coming off surgery. This is a guy who could be very good and is still young enough to be very good in a Cardinals uniform. And if and when he is, your return can be maximized. Instead, his value's at some of the lowest it's ever been. Unless someone comes in and blows you away, he's not a guy that I would be looking to move right now. Burleson, I think, is in the same boat for a different reason. And in fact, I would tie them at four if I could out of these five. Not because I don't think he has any value. I think he's got some real value, but because I think the Cardinals really like him. He fits their window. He's a guy who they think can fit in not just at first base. He can fit in multiple spots. So he can be kind of a bigger Donovan, instead of a Brendan Donovan, a biggin' Donovan. How about that?
Yeah.
I think probably your third priority. Who do we got? We got Nootbaar. We got Burleson. Let's see, Romero.
Gorman.
Yeah, Gorman. I would put down there too. You would be selling all potential and no production so far. I think his value is probably very low as well. Although certainly there are teams that will buy big power potential, thinking they can fix it. So there may be something there, but he would be down there too. I think Romero and Donovan should be the top two priorities. Romero probably, I don't think he'll fetch as much as Donovan will, but I think he's a guy who might be easier to move for what you're looking for, just because of the way the market is. He's left-handed. A 1 year, no bad thing, no such bad thing as a 1 year deal. So, I think there's that. Donovan, I think, too, coming off the injury and the way his season ended may have, hurt his value a little bit. It might be worth seeing what he does to open the season and trading him.
Interesting. I talked to a few teams that had interest, and they were not really concerned about his health. They were more understanding about what that might have done to put a drag on his production. That comes with the fact that, and this is maybe a contrast that's worth noting that you touched on, is the surgery that Brendan Donovan had by now is pretty, that there's an understanding of it and its recovery. Yeah. The surgery that, Lars Nootbaar had is more significant. It involves both feet. There's not the massive track record, but there has been significant strides, no pun intended, in the improvement of the surgery and the recovery from it. But you're talking about one guy having surgery that is well-known and understood, and teams are like, oh, well, we know where this is going. We understand it. Versus a guy who there's a little element there of like, all right, well, this is a feat. And feet are a big deal for hitters. And what does this mean? So I think that's
interesting. Feet are a big deal for, good defensive outfielders too,
Right. So. Absolutely. Great call. Yeah. Yeah. And talking with Lars, he mentioned some of the things that he felt he was unable to do in center field just because of the pain. And he wanted to alleviate that. So we'll see, he's a guy who has moved well in the past, quarterback in his past, has played reliable center field, and just felt like there wasn't that kind of, he was running through pain. So that explosiveness wasn't quite there. So your five makes most sense to trade. It's wisest to trade Jojo Romero. There's not a whole lot of lefty depth on the Cardinals roster, but they can sort that out either through Rule 5. They can find a way if they're not interested in contending. They can maximize what they get in return. He's only got 1 year remaining. The free agent market is not very strong for lefties, so that makes sense. Brendan Donovan may never be higher. You think about it. There's a whole group of teams interested in adding him because they think he can help them be contenders. You come to the trade deadline, all of a sudden the teams who are contenders, and that list might be a little bit shorter. And then the others kind of more in a Burleson, because he did get nearer to his potential. Gorman is in a similar spot, but on the opposite end of the spectrum, because he hasn't made movement on his potential. And then last of your five was Lars Nootbaar, who is just so much upside, but a lot of unknown because of the health. Now, I think that's really – I like that. I like the way you put that list together. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I think you should take it to the next news meeting.
Oh, I will do that. I will probably be talked over again, like whenever I suggested Brendan Donovan would have.
Well, just hand them the podcast and say, here, we explained it. We did really good.
I want to pull it up on our Apple Podcasts and be like, here, guys, and just set my phone down and walk away.
Hey, this is where I put a
phone drive.
This is where I put a plug that the best podcast in baseball is available wherever you get your podcasts, right? So Wilson Contreras real quick, and then we want to get to something that we did before on the podcast, and I'm glad that we're going to try to get back to, just because, Nathan, you're bringing this to the table, and it should be really helpful. I asked Heim Bloom, you know, when he had a press conference about Sonny Gray trade, about where things stood with Arenado and Wilson Contreras, the two remaining players with no trade clauses. And, you know, he said not much has changed from when they spoke at the end of the season. You know, there's still interest on both on Arenado and Cardinal side of making a deal. When it comes to Contreras, he has not altered his preference or shifted from his preference to stay, you know, and be a part of it. Heim did mention that he had not talked to Wilson after completing the Sonny Gray trade, but in talking with folks around the Cardinals and players in the clubhouse, Sonny was pretty candid with, well, he was candid with us in, you know, after his final start in San Francisco. He's candid with reporters, and he also told teammates, you know, he thinks the time is right in his career to go try to pursue a team that's trying to contend, and that wasn't going to be the Cardinals. He had a long talk with Heim Bloom, and he said, I know the direction they're going, and this may not be the place for me to go pursue. And so I don't think, you know, the trading of Sonny's not going to catch anybody off guard in that regard. No. So, I think, you know, when you talk about like Wilson, there's still a place for him on this team. There's still a way for that. And, for him to contribute, and and you know, I last check with him, there's still a want to contribute. You know, we'll see how this plays out. You know, the Cardinals are going through a hearty restructuring of the roster. They continue to stiff arm any notion of a rebuild, and goodness knows they've been asked seven different ways every 5 minutes about why they're not calling it a rebuild. But you know, they don't want to surrender games in the coming years because they have to sell tickets. But they also, you know, they also don't want, I'll be honest, man, I think they don't want to, in fact, I know it's not a matter of, I think, all right, let me dispense with that weird way I begin sentences. All right. I know that they don't want to even allow for the notion that this is going to be a long, painful, unsuccessful turnaround. Like, oh, yeah. That's what's driving some of their comments, is they know that that is not permissible. They know that if they get the fan base to buy into this, that it's not the case of like, yeah, you know, we're going to be the White Sox. You know, we're going to be the Rockies. We got a 5-year plan that 3 years from now, we're going to talk about being a 5-year plan. You know, that they recognize that that's not, you know, this notion that like, oh, well, going into a rebuild, man, it can be rocky and it can be turbulent, and it comes with no promises. You know, the Cardinals are kind of like, whoa, whoa, whoa. No, we have to come with some promises. Like, it has to be some promises. And I thought that was most apparent, Nathan, in Heim Bloom's comments about how you can have the long view for when you contend, but you cannot have the long view with urgency. He said, our practice is to be urgent every day to get the best talent available. And if that talent then performs the next day, we're a better team. If that talent then performs 3 years from now, we're a better team. But we have to have urgency constantly to get better with the team. And I thought that was a really interesting way to articulate it, because it did shift some of the pressure that Cardinal fans are accustomed to applying. They are accustomed to applying an urgent pressure. What are you doing today that makes you better in October? What did you do in today's game that helps you get closer to a pennant? There is a real sense of Cardinal fans applying urgency to their measurement of the team. And what Heim did with that comment was just slightly shifted a little bit and say, hey, your urgency is still welcome. That's still a measure by which to judge this team. Let's just shift the DeLorean a year or two into the future, but still hold us accountable for getting better today. I kind of appreciated that. I'm not sure how it plays in Peoria, so to speak. Well, we know how it plays in Peoria. Peoria is where they're going to have some of the talent. That's where they're going to put some of their best talent.
About 100 miles an hour. That's how it plays. I
know. That's right. It's going to play at 99 from the left side at Peoria. But I thought that was an interesting comment. You know, and again, I don't know if the fan base will buy into it yet. I don't know if the fan base can stomach it. But it certainly, to me, took off the table this notion of like, look, we're having a long-range view for this team. Come with us, have a long-range view, and don't judge us along the way, which I hear from so many teams. Like, this is going to get rocky. Don't judge. Just heard it from the Astros. This is going to get rocky. I heard a different thing. I heard him say, we're going to have a longer view, but man, hold us every day. Did you get better? Are you closer? And I think the best way to look at this, I'm going to try to start looking at this, Nathan, and you tell me as an editor, but also as a co-host of the podcast, if this is wrong, is what did they do today to get them closer to their next World Series championship? Because it has always been, what did you do today to get yourself closer to the next World Series? Let's look at it this way. What did you do today to get closer to the next World Series championship?
It's Janet Jackson, right? What have you done for me lately? You know?
Yeah.
But this is baseball. This is the baseball version of that. And, you know, you mentioned Bloom kind of trying to reframe that a little bit. It's not just today and it's not only today. And the realistic, you know, the reality is that it's a couple of years in the future. I think you make a great point about what have you done to get better today. And I think it's illustrated in this trade a little bit. You know, you could have gotten a Brandon Clark and a couple of aged out AA, AAA prospects and just accumulated talent that you don't, you know, just to have bodies, right?
Instead, like 2023 trade deadline.
That's right. And instead, you shipped out Gray, which you knew was going to happen. And instead of leaving his spot empty, you filled it with Richard Fitz. And you got a potential blue chip arm. So it's not just a matter of, you know, building for the future. This isn't a tank to you know, we're putting all of our chips in 2029 or whatever year it is. We got a back end starter. Yes, he's a back end starter. Like, you didn't get an ace for an ace. Like, we understand how that works, right? But this is a guy who's going to give you reliable, valuable innings, in all likelihood anyway, in 2026, 2027, if we have a season and beyond. And so they did get better today. This is a team that without Sonny Gray would have needed, three starters, right? Instead of two now. And so this team without Sonny Gray has gotten better through this trade. This team has gotten better in 28, 29, if and when Clark works out and makes his debut. So I think he did exactly, not only did he say that, but he's now illustrated that with his first major move leading the front office.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it signals what's ahead. What's ahead for us, Nathan, is something that we did in the past, but we want to bring back. And it was a great idea by Carter Chapley, who was with the Post-Dispatch for a while. His idea was to kind of take the chat notion and bring it to the audio arena. So what you've done, and I hope we do this semi-regularly, is you have some questions from the weekly chat. We didn't have one this week because of the holiday, so this works out even better. And you're going to ask them of me, and this is our few good men moment, right? Like, this is where I have to see if I can both answer the questions.
Can you handle
pop quiz, and can I present the truth?
I love that. Okay. The first question here is from Ken, Derek, and I want you to know this is the same question I ask myself when I grab a cordless drill but forget the battery.
Okay.
Where will the power come from?
Who knows? Gosh, it's a great question. Cardinals had the, one of what, three teams that had a leading home run hitter on the team, what, 20 or fewer. Burleson has more power to give, took a real stride this year. You know, the Cardinals are currently banking on some more power coming from the guys who they hoped it would come from this past season, and that's Gorman from the left and Jordan Walker from the right. You know, I've spent some time both talking with Jordan Walker, but also talking with folks about Jordan Walker this offseason. This is a big offseason. That's what Chaim Bloom said. This is a big offseason for Jordan, and clearly they want that power to manifest with him. Wilson Contreras has more power to give if he's around. I seeing as how he came out of last spring, coming into the season, the time at first base, just all that. Gosh, he just sure seemed primed for a career kind of power surge that's still there. I think he's got a lot of power. That all of that is to say that it's a great question with no clear answer. And, you know, the answer, it might be it's not. Like, that might be the answer, is your cordless there drill might be. Yeah, your cordless drill might be without a battery.
Oh, my wife's going to be mad.
You know, it just might not be. You know, the Cardinals are counting on it coming from internally, and it may not be.
A guy you didn't mention who I think has some pop if he can stay healthy, and I like a lot, is Herrera.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought him up. Yeah, that's a really, really interesting thing. Like, you know, and we'll dive into this on a podcast at some point in time. Probably more spring, to be honest, is this question of like, what is the value of him at catcher if you're reducing what you get from him at offense? It's a big question for the Cardinals come March, maybe even February, because I'm glad you brought him up, because, you know, I think it's really interesting that he changed the power profile for him this past year. I think, yeah, you know, he's always been like a real quality hitter, really good kind of balanced hitter, lots to like about line drive rates, contact rates, just really good. But the question was like, would that power take the leap, either in doubles or homers, but basically slug? Would the slug take the leap to being a top flight DH? And I don't know how you walk away from last season. And my view, and some of the folks I talked to, it certainly shifted through the course of the season to like, you can't walk away from that and go, well, nah, there's more there. There's more damage to be had there. And yeah, maybe that's the guy. I'm glad you brought him up. That's a good question. That's a good answer.
He came through in some really big moments. Well, listen, it wasn't just me. Ken mentioned him in his question. I just had to get it out like a jerk. But yeah, you know, this is a guy who Herrera, not Ken, but who came in, and I'm sure Ken came in some big moments too, but Herrera came through in some big moments, you know, last season, even though he dealt with some injuries. And so, you know, I don't know if you want in this era, if you want a guy like that as your top high end slugger, right? When a game that requires some pop, you know, but I think he could provide some in 2026 and beyond. Next question here, Derek, we'll move on. We've got John asking, will Busch Stadium changes include a sports book or gambling area?
Not as of now. There will not be. That has, quote unquote, been tabled. As I talked to officials, some background on that. You know, when the big push, this is a few years ago, you started seeing a sports book at Wrigley Field. You know, their sports betting was getting legalized in states, some states, not others. There were teams that wanted to capitalize on this. One way they thought about doing that was a sports book that introduced the notion to their fans, gave them somebody who needed to rent space. So, but also was an advertising aspect, right, to a brick and mortar place that stood up as a spot you could go. Obviously we have seen now, as Missouri sports betting goes legal here, December 1st, you know, other states have had years of a head start on this, but so too does people who partake in that. And, they've seen the trend is that people go to the sports book in their pocket, not to the sports book at their ballpark. Mm-hmm. And so the notion is like, maybe that setup isn't as lucrative and isn't as necessary as it first appeared and first seemed to be. And you see this other places too, like, you know, some of the sports books have shifted a little bit, you know, that it's basically, you know, as necessary as the Jostens ring store outside of Wrigley now. Yeah. 10 years after they've won the World Series. It's just not doing the same amount of foot traffic. In this case, it's because everybody is carrying a casino in their pocket. And so there are better use of that. And so that's the thinking, is that the Cardinals are not going to do that right now. There is a way that one will eventually appear, but you know, that would be part of a larger kind of entertainment notion where the sportsbook would be a factor, but not be the, it might be what it's named after, but it wouldn't be the only thing there. Cause that's,
it wouldn't be its own, like a standalone.
Correct. It would have to be something that would bring in people for a different experience than just that, which they can get, on their phone.
Maybe part of like, are you saying like a part of Ballpark Village or something similar to that, or still in Busch?
I mean, like one example would be like a restaurant, right? You would have a restaurant set up geared towards more of a thematic kind of thing that would be a place to go to eat as well as have a sportsbook present. So it would have to have some sort of entertainment element that might would build off a sportsbook presence, not be centered around the sportsbook.
That makes sense.
That's just my idea. That's just
sure. I know you're working on some of this reporting already, but do you get a sense of where the Cardinals are at? Where, you know, as Missouri gets ready to legalize sports betting, which of course was something that all of the franchises in the state push for, but the Cardinals do.
Yeah, the Cardinals are. I mean, they've had a long buildup of lobbying for this, so they've had a long runway, to borrow their word from the ball field. Preparing for this, now it's just about pressing the go button and see what happens. They have a partner in, they have a partnership, so they wanted that. There's going to be signage around the ballpark. They are hyper aware of the current optics in the game with the Guardians pitchers, who were part of allegedly part of a pitch fixing scheme. Major League Baseball and the Players Union are involved in shaping and policing what they feel they need to do to preserve the integrity of the game. There's a lot of questions and a lot of concerns. The Cardinals feel that they have, I've talked with people on both sides of this, Cardinals feel that they have a partner in this now who, they're not going to be doing, I mean, look, the policing of this is at the league level. It's above, I mean, the Cardinals aren't going to be a part of this. But the Cardinals feel like their partnership can help facilitate that better. You know, the more you get along, or I'm sorry, more you go along to get along, the better in this regard. I was talking with an executive with one of the sports betting companies, and he was describing, he's right. The new policies that Major League Baseball worked on along with the Ohio governor to limit prop bets and to limit individual event bets within a parlay, right? Those limits would not have been possible without legalized gambling, because there would be no one, like, where would your authority go? You couldn't impose that. Now the question is, would somebody have dreamed up that scheme and had as much money to win had sports betting not been as readily available? Would you have found, an unregulated bookie to take those bets, or are they a product of, app betting with a thumb? That's another conversation, but clearly the mechanisms are in place. And I've talked to more folks about this, to at least work together when they see a problem, and the sheer size of it and also the money that's at stake has created, an infrastructure to at least identify betting irregularities that they feel that they can act upon. Now the Cardinals are just going to Cardinals. I shouldn't say the Cardinals, but now Missouri and Cardinal fans are just going to contribute to those data points that help do that.
Yeah, you mentioned, having a casino in your pocket and that being kind of more, the thought behind not keeping a sports book in a stadium. I mean, that's going to, make the temptation high, right, for some of these. And I don't just mean bettors. I mean players. I mean, you know, all kinds of people. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. One of the questions I asked Nathan was if they would, if the content of their promotions might change in the sense that, and I'm really eager to see if this happens. You know, you think about like, you know, the bets you see on television, right? Like this betting company, sponsors the lineup, you know, this guy is, you know, bet him on him to get this return if he hits a home run. Right. I wondered if you might see a change in the content of those promos in the sense that the bets still exist. They're still available to fans, but what is actually part of the broadcast or promotion of the game, if the content of those promotions changes to be less fixated on a performance that might give off the perception or trouble the integrity of the game,
the appearance of impropriety.
Right. Like an extreme example of this that now can happen, but an extreme example of this is like, just for a moment, imagine if in the past year you had a broadcaster say, "Welcome to the Guardians hosting the Tigers. We're here and, you know, we're getting ready for the first pitch. And oh, by the way, you know, betting company X is saying that if this first pitch is a strike, you can win this much if you bet as part of a parlay." And then that first pitch is a strike or whatever, right? Like just the optics of it is you would stop doing that. That doesn't take away the availability of those things. It just changes the promotion of it to be more in tune with the perception of what they're watching. I had a really interesting conversation with somebody, and I'm going to write about this, about how to use the promotion of the sports app and the available prop bets to inform fans, not to detract from the game, that don't make that the narrative, but make that the like part of the scouting report on a player. I think that's an interesting way to think about it.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Use it as a almost like analytics in a way, but you know,
futures.
Futures. Yep. Great point. Yeah, great way to say it. Next question, Derek, from Matt L. If there is a work stoppage that wipes out the 2027 season, do contracts simply slide a year?
They do not. No, they do not. The part of that would be negotiated, but no, it counts as a year on the calendar. It would be negotiated as to what service time looks like and all that stuff. But they are not paid. That I say that with the big asterisk that like these things are negotiated, right? But contracts are not honored during a lockout. Players are not paid. It's part of why they're putting together a massive war chest to help players through a time when they might not get paid. You know, players are contributing to that. It's going to the union, all that stuff. Owners are doing the same at this time. That's the phrase that they use for it. War chest. It feels weird to say that, but it is. That's the internal phrase. But anyway, to your point, no, the contracts are, they are for that year. And they're not paid. And so whatever happens from there will have to be negotiated in regards to service time, what's next, what teams can offer, all of that stuff. Quality, yeah, qualifying offers, all that stuff. It just basically it puts a pause. It freezes the action, but does not stop the calendar. That's the way I would look at it.
Right. Yeah, that the urgency to get something done before a potential lockout was, I imagine, a reason the Red Sox pursued Gray so aggressively. That 1 year deal, you know, the uncertainty after this year. Yeah. It's a big deal.
Very appealing.
Next question. We're from Taguchi99. This is a great name. Great username. Why does the front office keep saying they're trying to compete this year?
They have tickets to sell.
Yeah. That kind of seemed like,
there is a less snarky response. They have tickets to sell. but the less snarky response is, look, the NL Central is going to NL Central, and the NL Central is always volatile, and no team, not even the tankiest of tanking tankersons, is going to say we're surrendering on this team on this season. You know, a year ago at this time, you didn't hear the Colorado Rockies going, you know what we are, what we're going to do. We are not going to compete at all. Get ready.
We're going to lose 130 games.
Now, what they say and what they do is different. You know, I mean, the Rockies, they're like, man, you know what? You know what would be a really good time to have the worst record in baseball is the year we don't have access to the lottery. That would be awesome. That would be really good. In any other, you know, 5-10 years ago, we get the first pick overall. But let's time this treacherous, terrible, no good, very bad season right when we cannot get a top six pick. Good job, guys. You know, but to the Cardinals specific, and it's a great question, and I think it's a fair question because it does sound like they want their cake and they want to eat it too. But the division makes that possible, and no team wants to dismiss the fact that they might capture lightning in a bottle. You know, Cardinals don't know how this is going to play out. They don't know what their opponents are going to look like. They don't know what, you know, they don't know if they're going to all of a sudden get some performance from the ages from some guy. They don't know if everything's going to click. They just can't. Now, they will project and they will use their models and they will go, yeah, you know what, if this will have a, you know, we'll have a, you know, a confidence interval, you know, the bell curve, right? The most likely outcome for this roster is 77 wins. And what are we paying for? Is it all that different from 72 wins? Is it all that different from 82 wins? You know, what does that look like? And, but somewhere on the outliers is where everything goes wrong and you're the Rockies, and somewhere, well, maybe not that bad. Something goes wrong and you're the Pirates.
Don't even put that in the ether, man.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's another part of it, the tail there, where everything goes right, and all of a sudden, you're winning 91 games, right? 93 games. And so that's why they talk that way, is because they know two things exist. One, they're going to play baseball, and the game can be unpredictable, and players can outperform expectations. And in some ways, they really want these players to outperform expectations. They want Libertor to become the ace. They want, you know, Michael McGreevy to manifest. They want this all to work out. And if it all does, they'll be better than their projections. And you know what better than their projections get in the National League Central? It might just get a division title.
It could. You know, the thing about the Cardinals is they, you know, what do they call it? The devil magic, right? You know?
Yeah.
They run off a record-setting win streak, or, you know, you never know. And nobody wants to throw in the towel before the fight's begun.
Exactly.
You know? So I think that's a great way to look at it. And then last question here from Avi Loeb. Is there any sense that Nootbaar's recent surgery is making the front office lean more toward keeping him so that he can prove his health before a trade at next year's deadline? We talked about this a little bit. But
yeah, I apologize for getting ahead of the conversation there. We should have waited for the question. But I think, you know, we touched on that quite a bit in the sense that, yeah, you know, I mean, they have a vision of what Lars Nootbaar can be, and they have a recognition that they haven't seen that happen. You know, I think the way it was phrased to me, or I know the way that it was phrased to me, was that they haven't seen the best of him in their uniform for a season yet, and they're still really intrigued by what that could look like. You know, the pressure here is he's got two more years of control, right? So where does he fit into their window? You know, there's a world where he fits beyond those 2 years and he does things that they're like, you know what, this is a guy to do the best to keep around because now he's healthy, he's moving well, he does a lot of things well. You know, beneath the surface, he's a lot, teams are interested because they're intrigued by what the automated ball strike system will do for his career. You know, it's going to be a few extra pitches, a few extra walks, you know, it might not be like a whole lot, but it's gonna contribute in some way, just because of his command and what his feel is at the plate. So I think, you know, I think the question put it really well, Nathan, is this notion that like they look at this guy and go, we have a really good idea about what he could be, and it might be difficult to watch that happen elsewhere when he spent 2 years here searching for health.
Let's look at the far end of that bell curve that you mentioned earlier, right? Where everything goes well for Nubar. He's in perfect health. He finally looks like exactly what the Cardinals, you know, think he can be like. Mm-hmm. Trade deadline rolls around. Do you think, do you get a sense that he's gone, or do you get a sense this is a guy they go, no, we want to hold on to?
Real possibility that he's gone, and really desirable in the sense that he'd have an extra year of control. You know, if he is on that upswing, then are you looking at a guy who you give a qualifying offer for so then you can get a draft pick? I mean, you know, and that plays into it for the Cardinals too. You know, all those factors come into play. Like if you're talking about the extreme where he's at his – he's reaching or he's ascending towards his the peak of his potential, right, healthy, raging. He's a left-handed bat in an era when left-handed bats are super valuable for postseason production. He could be an on-base percentage monster at a time when teams are like, man, one way to get through the playoffs is not to make outs. And he does, you know, at his best, he does not make outs. He can play multiple positions if he's going really well. And then he would have that extra year of control so that you would have this notion that like, oof, if he's good, that qualifying offer becomes tempting, and another year of control. So yeah, there's a, you know, like in your scenario, Nathan, where he's on the extreme of the production, there would be a lot to like for what they could command at the trade deadline.
You think they're
but also like if he's playing that well, they might be kind of okay.
Yeah, well, that was kind of my thought, right? Like, is if he is, you know, if we are on the far end of that bell curve, right?
Actually, I say that, I don't know who's pitching, so I should really deal back on that. But yeah,
that's fair enough. But you got to think if things are going well for him, they're going well for at least some others.
Yeah, fair.
You know, I do wonder, though, if there would be protests in the streets if Lars Nubar was traded. He's like, he's beloved.
This is a real good question that is something to maybe search. The Cardinals need to do a little searching on, too, is if you trade Sonny Gray and you trade Nolan Arenado, you know, you're trading your highest priced but also most accomplished players. You know, you're moving on from the notion of always having a Hall of Famer around, really. And then you trade Brendan Donovan, and if you consider trading Lars Nubar, who beyond Mason Wynn is the face of the franchise? And what do you build around? You put yourself in a position where the manager becomes the face of the franchise, or Chaim Bloom becomes the face of the franchise, which – we've already kind of gone through that era a little bit where John Mozeliak was so present as the representative of the franchise. It's been a little while. I mean, it has, just to be blunt, it's been a while since the most prominent part of the franchise that you see all around town on jerseys and posters and banners everywhere is a singular player. I'm really intrigued to see if the Cardinals get back to that. It could be JJ Weatherholt at this point. It could be, you know.
He would seem like a good candidate for it. You know, I mean, Wynn too, honestly. I know.
Yeah.
I have a buddy who for months complained because he couldn't find one of the City Connect jerseys for Mason Wynn. And
yeah.
Finally got one and was quite happy when it arrived.
Yeah, it's jersey time for Mason Wynn. We got to start selling more or stocking more of those, I would imagine. We'll see. How it goes.
Yeah. They got to buy somebody's jersey if they can't buy Gray and potentially Arenado and Donovan. And I could just keep listing names, honestly. Jerseys.
You could. That's Nathan Mills, editor at the Post Dispatch, and a guy who comes in and helps me out here with the best podcast in baseball. He also co-hosts the best podcast in video or best podcast in baseball video version. You're right. That is a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. I told you.
Yeah. You're right. All right. Well, maybe BPIB vidcast or whatever. The best vidcast in baseball. Something like that. Well, you can check that out at stltoday.com along with all of our constant Cardinals coverage. There's a story there about a milestone for the Cardinals in the world of CBA. They are a revenue sharing recipient this year. That matters bigly, hugely for the draft, but it also has an element of strategy that they can come into play. But it puts them... You know, I borrowed from Wicked, Nathan. I said they've defied gravity of their market for a while. They're in it. They're in it now. They are going to have the same tools as a smaller market team because their revenues have slid to a point where they're going to be able to take from the pool as opposed to take more from the pool than they give in. That's a change. And it's believed to be the first time since revenue sharing entered baseball in 96 that the Cardinals will do that. So that story is up at STLtoday.com. You can also find the best podcast in baseball there, along with Netfront Presence. We have a St. Louis City Soccer podcast, all sorts of podcasts there. You can also find chats there. The best podcast in baseball is available wherever you get your podcast. It's brought to you weekly by Closets by Design of St. Louis. Here at Thanksgiving, I want to say happy Thanksgiving to all of the listeners and also reiterate this podcast only exists because of the community that has really been generated around it. This is the 13th year of the podcast. This will be the 34th episode of the 13th year. That is a new high for number of episodes in a single quote unquote season. All of that is only made possible because of the listeners for the Wayback Machine, the PhDs, and also the listeners from around the globe who have kind of listened to this podcast and come to it from the days when Bernie Miklas and I were in an attic recording it and trying to learn how to modulate sound and edit audio. We've come a long way since then, and I'm thankful for what the listeners out there have made possible with this podcast. I just wanted to say that. So happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Nathan, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Derek. Happy Thanksgiving to you, brother.
Is this a good time to ask what holiday deadlines are? And when is my story due?
I got to tell you, while we were doing this podcast, there were like 6 emails that hit that I have not checked yet that are about holiday deadlines. So maybe, I don't know.
I think one of them probably says I've already missed my holiday deadline, so I better get right.
I can already hear the angry email. Derek filed how many inches? Yeah.
This is true. Yeah. But all of them worth reading.
I agree.
That's what you follow up with.
Every dang letter.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This holiday, deck their countertops with peppermint white chocolate mochas, gingerbread lattes, and pumpkin cream cold brews. Ninja Luxe Cafe is the ultimate gift. It's the number one best-selling espresso machine in the U.S., perfect for the coffee lovers in your life. If they can dream it, they can brew it. No skills needed. Espresso balanced. Drip coffee, rich. Cold brew in a flash. Hands-free, silky microfoam. Dairy or plant-based milks. Bring joy into their holiday and every day after with Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.